I think figuring out who you are, it's my belief and really mostly based on some different psychological theories that we are born complete. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Maslow that said, the self-actualized person is not someone with anything added. It's the person with nothing taken away. And so I think that that's really the journey of life, is finding yourself again.
Welcome. What am I at? Welcome to another Deeper the Dough episode with an old time friend for a good over a decade now, Wes Christensen.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for coming on.
Very happy to be here.
Can we start with, so we played football together, Mountain View High School. That's the brief intro, but the bigger intro, what have you been doing since then? What's a little bit about your background?
What haven't I been doing? So, man, I think the most relevant, background to give is I grew up in sports, as you know. I saw some success there and had a pretty significant injury. My freshman year of college, mm-hmm. tore three of the four ligaments in my left knee, as well as the meniscus, which caused a blood clot. It was not a good scenario. You know, the classic scene of the pile gets off you and your legs point in the wrong direction. So, went in to see the ortho. He's like, look, dude, it's going to be a good 16 to 18 month recovery to get you back to 70%. That's your new 100%. Like, you're not going to be able to compete at a high level anymore. And at the time, what worked for me is that my identity was so wrapped around being an athlete. I just wasn't hearing it. And so I started digging, trying to figure out what I could do, and ended up finding, performance psychology, visualization, and utilize some tools there. Long story short, I was full pads, full contact 6 months later. And that was kind of when I realized that I needed to learn more about how what goes on in between the ears affects what we do.
Okay.
Went on to play a short stint at Utah State. Absolutely hated my experience. And that was kind of eye-opening for me, because that's where I thought I wanted to be. Like, I made it, and after a while I realized, like, I'm not happy at all, dude. So I went on to get a master's degree in performance psychology at the University of Denver. And the study there was really like, how do we use the mind to enhance performance and increase well-being and fulfillment within the performance? That was a part that really snagged me. I was like, I think that's what we're really all after anyway, is the fulfillment piece. Right.
Yep.
Did that. I've since have worked with the military, Olympic professional athletes, amateur athletes, business professionals, really just working with people to help them enhance their fulfillment, improve their performance along the way, and hopefully live a better life. So that's the main focus right now.
I like that you said the performance psychology to have more fulfillment, because that's what we're after anyway. You know, like, we're exactly. after the high performance, and then we stop asking why. It's like, I just want to perform at a high level because people know me. But it's like, but why do you want people to know you? Like, you really do have to nail it down to that emotion, which typically is fulfillment or joy. Like, I do think that most people are after that. It's just, we don't ask ourselves why enough. It's like, I want a lot of money. Why? So I can spend more time with my family. Why? Well, and then I could also go on vacation, but why? But like, what emotion are you after? And I like that you, right off the bat, you're like, this is what I'm going to study. Anyways, how did you kind of get, separate yourself from that identity crisis? I feel like I cover that a decent amount on this. Typically it's you sell a business and you have that identity tied up with the business, but this is the same thing just with sports. Like, when you realized this isn't for me, how did you kind of peel away and realize, like, no, this is who I am. And this is, you know, I just happened to play sports for a while and really separate that.
Dude, I didn't until I found the tools in grad school.
Okay.
I was in a legit funk for a good like 2 years mm-hmm. after I stopped playing football. I just felt lost, didn't know who I was. And it's a super common thing. I think that we approach the success quest, like even the word success, like what does it mean? He's successful, she's successful. It what means money. Yeah. Yeah. Like, in our definition, if you hear someone say that, it's like, well, they must make a lot of money. They've achieved some outcome, supposedly, maybe. I think that we just approach it backwards, and we attach our definition of success to these external factors. And it's super common. A lot of my clients now, like they've reached this pinnacle that they thought was going to validate them or fill the hole, and they get there and it doesn't.
Yep.
And they kind of have this, oh crap moment where now what?
You know? Yeah. I have a theory. That's a very unproven theory. I went to Kenya a few months ago and it was bothering me that people like at the table with people in Kenya, they would start talking about, oh my gosh, I love this trip because of how blessed I am. And I'm like, well, if you're blessed, what does that make them? Like unblessed? Like what did they get to not get blessed? And you were just born in a different country. Like, is that blessed or is that lucky? Because if you say it's lucky, anyways, or it happenstance or whatever, right? I just felt like blessed is like, well, if I'm blessed and you're not, did you do something bad? So didn't really like that. But then I'm like, well, are we really blessed compared to people in Kenya? And I'm like, who knows how to look it up or what to actually measure it by? But I just started with suicide rates. You're 3 times more likely to die by suicide in the United States than Kenya. So it's like, are we really blessed? Did God really bless us? Or is it just a different set of challenges and things like that? Anyways, so I'm like, well, why do we have higher suicide rates? And I do think that maybe it's because it's, well, I'm going to be happy when, and then you achieve that. And then you're happy for a little bit and then you get used to it. And then it's, I'm happy when, and it's this, the happiness gap theory. I'm going to be happy if I shorten this gap. Anyway, so it's how do you not do that? So you mentioned some tools and I'd love to hear some tools. One that I just recently heard was on this happiness gap theory is rather than trying to get the next thing to make you happy, shorten that gap by just wanting what you already have and practice that through meditation. You know, then it gives you a few different techniques. But what are some of those things that you learned in grad school to pull you out of that 2-year funk that other people can maybe practice at home?
Yeah. Probably the very most common thing that I talk about is being. It seems super, I think it makes sense when you look at it this way, but you ever talk about goal setting or really accomplishment or achieving, people approach success from this place of, I've got to do something. Mm-hmm. I've got to have something. And nobody talks about being. You set a goal to earn $1 million this year. It's not the $1 million that you want. What you're trying to become is the person that can create that.
Yeah.
And so what you're really defining is, who am I going to be? Nobody, at least from what I've seen, most people are not digging that deep. They're starting with, you know, what do I want to have or achieve? They're not asking why they want to have or achieve those things. And then they just start putting together task lists, lists of things they have to do. But I think that you get what you want if you are willing to become a source of what you're looking for now. And so figuring out the being, like what's your life going to be about, I think is the ticket
for a lot of people. I think I stumbled into that without really knowing. When I started doing sales and I'm like, okay, I could make X amount of money in a summer with this company selling this pest control product. But every year I kept switching and I looked at it as it was a Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. In your 20s, work to learn, not to earn. And so I was becoming all these decisions were riskier because I'm leaving a company with sure pay, knowing a product, because I was just focused on becoming a professional salesperson. I didn't want to just be a salesperson. I wanted to become a professional salesperson. And then looking back, I'm like, wow, that's focusing on that rather than just sticking with the same company and earning the most amount of money possible. I feel like it has really set me up because I did focus on being, and I'm really just putting that together as you mentioned it.
Yeah, it's really simple. I mean, if we think about you want to create a certain result in your life, that's going to come from action, right? Where does action come from? It comes from your being, right? And you can really, you know, moment to moment, we're presented with these choice points. If I'm upset because someone cut me off on the freeway or whatever it is, it's because I'm being a certain way, right? If I'm, on the other hand, if I'm being, you know, loving presence or whatever, my my actions, what I put out in the world is going to look very much different. And so I think that being is really the highest leverage point for reverse engineering all of the doing and the having. And then if you're aligned with the being that you're looking for, the doing and having is in alignment too. And then the finish lines kind of fade away. You don't have to go through the pain of reaching the summit that you thought was a summit, realizing that that was someone else's goal that was set for you. That was someone else's expectations that you've been chasing all along. Why isn't my hole filled? And now you got to find the next finish line.
Yep.
Right. And never learn from that lesson. Whereas I think if you can just figure out the being piece, who am I going to be? Like, what's my life going to be about? And then learn to model that moment to moment. The doing and the having figures itself out.
I love that. And then it's figuring out, well, who the hell do I want to be? You mentioned
that's the work, dude.
That's where I'm at right now. And here's, anyways, you mentioned somebody cutting you off in traffic, you know, and I just listened to a meditation theory that he talks about anything that we don't like, or is just because we have resistance to it. So you have your circle of comfort. Anything that we don't like, it's because it's out of that circle. So if you could just widen that circle a little bit and then, and accept that, like, you cut me off and I accept that, whatever, like, I'm not mad about it, whatever. And you slowly widen that circle. And I think he was a Buddhist guy, 'cause he said, and you know, to become a Buddha, you no longer have a circle. You're just accepting towards everything. So I'm like, that's it. Maybe that's my goal. What do I want to be? Be somebody that doesn't have those resistance to these outside external factors, that it's, oh, this is bad because I'm late and this person cut me off. And rather than just seeing it as an experience, like, it just happened and that's it. That's all there is to it. It just happened.
Yeah. It's a really good point too, because I think part of figuring out who we want to be requires that we figure out who we are in the first place. And if you're familiar with shadow work at all, it's a big part of my work. These situations that trigger you, I always use the car example, because that's been like a default one for me.
Yeah.
All my life, I've just kind of assumed the worst in people, right? Never like, well, maybe he's going to the hospital. Like, maybe he's got more of a reason to be in a hurry than I do, right? The things that trigger us, whether, you know, negative or even positive, are things that are within us that we haven't accepted, that we've swept into the shadow. It's just kind of this place that we're no longer aware of. If you really want to do the nitty gritty work, it takes vulnerability, right? Nobody wants to admit that the aunt or uncle at Thanksgiving dinner that triggers the crap out of them every year does it because there's an aspect or trait that they see in that person that they need to reconcile within themselves. So I think doing some work to figure out who you are is a very foundational step to figuring out, well, who do you want to be then?
Yeah. And I'm kind of just, okay, who am I? And when you define who you are, you usually, or at least I will look at these external factors. And then I assign those to who I am, which I'm trying to also peel that away. Like you mentioned
Well, everyone asks, what do you do?
Yeah, yeah.
No one asks, who are you?
Yeah. And even if they do, it's like, what are people going to answer? And it's usually like, well, this is the career. This is my relationship and my family, you know, and it's, but not like, this is the type of person I am.
Yeah.
I don't know. I heard kind of same thing, because you have these thoughts and then you judge yourself based on your thoughts. And this other guy's philosophy was, well, it's your hand, but are you your hand? And it's like, well, no, you can't. If it's your hand, it belongs to you, but that's not you. Mm. And then he drew that. So it's like, well, the thought is the same thing. You aren't your thought. It's your thoughts. They're rising in your body, but that doesn't mean it's you, and trying to separate yourself, which I don't know, maybe it's more confusing than it is enlightening, but
no,
like how do you determine who you are? Right. With all of that said and done, what advice do you have for me?
Great question. Oh, geez. How much time do you have? I'm just kidding. I think figuring out who you are, it's my belief and really mostly based on some different psychological theories, that we are born complete. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Maslow that said the self-actualized man or person is not someone with anything added. It's the person with nothing taken away. And so I think that that's really the journey of life, is finding yourself again. So you can think of, we're kind of born as this whole being. Just think about the way we're attracted to little babies. Uh-huh. Like, we just want to be around them. They're beautiful. And then as we grow, as we're, you know, cultured and socialized, we pick up these cues from the environment, from mom and dad, from siblings, from teachers, from neighbors, that give us this feedback that says being that way is not favorable to, like, receive acceptance and validation, yep. Which at that age, to your ego, it means it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get rid of that stuff. And again, that's the stuff that goes in the shadow. Usually the stuff in the shadow is the most noble parts of you. It's the ambitious parts of you. Maybe you heard dad talking about how it's not good to be wealthy when you were young.
Money's the root of all evil.
Money, yeah. Exactly.
Bible coming
you,
in
you
at you.
You pick up all of this stuff, man. And then all of these, you pick these things up. Assertiveness
Implying.
Becomes aggression.
Yeah.
Can't be that. You know, what were you told growing up that it is to be a good boy or a girl, or be a good man or a good woman? You hear all of those good things, and all of the, you know, the potential opposites or things that don't fit in that box, they all go into the shadow. And those traits that are yours, they just kind of get forgotten about. And so that's one really effective tool, is to take a look at who and what triggers me, mm-hmm. what really gets me worked up. And again, this is, when I was first introduced to this, I did not want to look here. I've got, you know, we've all got family members that we don't want to.
Yeah, I'm just like picturing my mom, like, in my head right now. I'm like, why is she triggering me so freaking much?
Dude, it takes a lot of ownership to say, like, okay, what traits are there
yeah.
that I have kind of suppressed and swept under the rug? But I think, you know, even on a more, I think like a lower barrier of entry here for people, is looking at the people that inspire you. Mm-hmm. Because it's the same thing. It's projection is the word for it. If we think about the people that inspire us, we didn't pick them. They kind of pick us, right? It's weird how that happens. Different people inspire different people. Yep. And what happens is that your psyche is projecting these traits. So half the time they might be like fictitious people, or they're often people that you don't know personally. Mm-hmm. But they do represent these traits to you that they may or may not have. It's looking at these people, these heroes in our lives that we look up to, that inspired us for who knows why. It's looking at them and picking out the traits that they represent to you, and recognizing those are traits that are already within you, mm-hmm. that need to be expressed more. That's why they're standing out to you. You need to express those traits in a healthy way. And so working on those things and integrating those parts of yourself that you've forgotten about, or that you've resisted accepting, I think that's kind of the journey of figuring out who you are.
So there's kind of two ways. I mean, you look at what you don't like, and then trying to recognize what exactly it is that you don't like about them, and then relate it to what do you have internally that you need to get through. So then you can accept that. Mm-hmm. You can widen that little circle a little bit more.
Yes.
And then the other opposite side, if I should call it that, is finding who inspires you. What are those things, that those traits that inspire you about that person? And then again, going back inwardly and saying, okay, how do I express that more myself?
Yes, exactly. You got to integrate those. You've got to productively integrate those traits into your life. So that can be trickier with the negative stuff. Right. Uh-huh. You've got a relative and it's like, man, he's so narcissistic. If you look at that, oftentimes narcissism could also be, maybe that's just someone who, you know, someone who takes care of themselves, who prioritizes their well-being and sets uh-huh. boundaries, could also be perceived as narcissistic. So there can be sort of healthy sides to these negative labels, and it's digging into those to see, you know, what do I need to be more of?
That's really cool. I like that a lot. And I've started to notice that a little bit. Like I had a brother that I got really close with because we had a solar company together. And before, like he was there's nine kids and we're all pretty close. And it's all like you come to a family thing because it's a family thing, you know, and him and his wife and his kids, they're like, no, we're not going to come if we don't want to come. And I didn't understand that. I was like, that's so stupid. And then I got, you know, I lived next to him in San Diego for a few years and I learned a ton from him. And that was like one of the things that I ended up respecting him the most for was going into it before understanding it was like, oh, a judgment. Like, why don't you love the family? You know, why don't you come to Thanksgiving? And it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with, well, no, I'm loving myself and my wife and my kids, and we're going to do what's best for us. And I was just like, man, that's actually harder to do, to like stand up for yourself. And then, anyways, it was just such a big flip for me. And I'm like, man, that's super cool that he's been doing that all these years and been setting a good example when I was perceiving it as a bad example.
Yes. And that's I think there is a lot of bravery here. The reason is that this stuff that we swept under the rug, it's what makes us as average as we could come up with. Mm-hmm. And so integrating these traits to the ego, they all represent danger. They represent less conformity to the norm, less averageness.
Yeah.
So for your brother, that was, you know, that could have been perceived as selfish.
Which for me, that's how I perceived it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah. Like, so it was a risk for him.
Why is he so selfish? But is probably healthy for his family that mm-hmm. he was prioritizing things that way. Right. And so like the end result of like Carl Jung's work was he thought we all needed to reach this place of individuation where you re-become an individual mm-hmm. and, you know, you kind of pluck yourself from the herd to become your true self again. And the interesting thing about that is that, and I think that this is really why it's such a beautiful model for like working with modern people, is that we're so disconnected from each other with social media technology and like, you know, the way work life is set up and everything. But what happens with someone who is individuating, someone who is moving in that direction, the natural product as they become more of an individual mm-hmm. is that they want to share. So it really is this model where you become the person you admire. You become your, you know, best self. And then as a natural byproduct, you share that with the world. And I think that there is immense meaning to be found there when we shift our gaze from being inward to mm-hmm. how can I make the world a better place? There's a lot of meaning and impact to be had there. I think that that's really what everyone's looking for anyway.
So the Joe that you met, you know, as he was leaving, you're coming in the episode right before you, or the guest right before you, he was talking about vulnerability and crying in front of his kids. And so I thought, you know, in the last year and a half, I've cried more than I've ever cried in my entire life, multiple times. And before that, my wife had only seen me cry once and my kids never seen me cry. And I told him that the change was psychedelics. And now it's kind of fun coming full circle. You talk about sharing something that's helped you. You were the one who got me into that. It was about probably a year and a half ago. And that's completely changed who I am and who I want to become as well. And allowed me to dive in deeper, way deeper than I ever had on who am I and what the hell am I even trying to go for. I was telling you that I want to do something with mental health. And you said, before you finalize what you want to do, you have to go have a psychedelic experience. So one, thank you. And thank you for figuring it out and then sharing it with me. It's been absolutely life-changing to me.
You feel kind of responsibility too, right? When you have an experience, you have to share it. Yeah. Yeah. So that's part of what I'm doing is integration work. Uh-huh. There's with this third wave of psychedelics, there's a lot of people like going and having these experiences, but it oftentimes turns into kind of this drive-through psychedelics where they have this experience and then, you know, next time back at work I just kind of go back into the rut that I was in, even though I just had the most meaningful experience of my life. And it's going to be weird for people to hear us say, you know, most meaningful experience ever. I haven't experienced it, but, if you've been there, you understand.
It's on the Michael Pollan, I think, is that his name?
Yeah.
Anyways, he shared a stat on that on his book where the Netflix documentary, and it was like 85% of people that try psilocybin for the first time rate it as the top five experiences of their life. I was like, yeah, what a product.
Right next to right? Like first child's yeah. birth.
Marriages, things like that. Yeah. Like it really is that, even if it's not a happy, super, like my experiences aren't like, oh, I love everything. It's like, holy shit, I have a lot of anxiety. I didn't know that that was there. But it's just allowing me to see things in a different point of view.
Yes. Part of the reason I'm such a fan of psychedelics as a tool is because I think they're one of the best, most effective tools for really getting plucked out of your regular mm-hmm. lens to see who and how am I being and how's that working? What needs to get changed? What could be improved? What do I need to drop? Incredible tool for self-discovery and self-development. I think it's, yeah, I'm excited to see where things go now that we're, I think that, you know, legally things are changing.
Yeah. Ketamine's legal now. Oh, yeah. It's been legal for a little bit.
There
that's
you go.
A,
yeah.
That's, and, a, that's what we're talking about.
And the stigma too. Is, yeah. The stigma too is lifting slowly but surely yeah. as well. And so.
See, I remember on my first experience, one thing that like tormented me, I was like, well, what makes me happy? And it was like, well, what's supposed to make me happy? And what's supposed to make me happy is going on vacations and being on the beach. And then I'm like, I don't even like sand that much. And that was just like, holy shit, I don't even know what happiness was. And that was a terrible feeling. Cause I'm like, I've been telling myself it's just being on the beach and then like actually analyzing it under mushrooms. I don't even like that. So what is it, you know? Mm. And then it did allow me to go deeper and, well, it's actually being with my family. It has nothing to do with being on the beach. It's just being with my family in not a high stress environment.
Yes. Oh man.
But how many years would it have taken me to figure that out if I would have ever figured it out?
Yeah. If ever, that's the thing. You guys ever watch Go Dog Go?
No.
Okay. One of my favorite like quotes
kid
ever.
Shows or what?
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay. Like, it's a kid show. It's, I think it's based off like a Dr. Seuss book or something. It's a pretty old book. One of the characters said to the other, my boys were watching this a couple months ago. One of them said to the other, hey, when you're walking, you're going somewhere, but when you're strolling, you're already there. And I like overheard that while I was cooking breakfast and it blew my mind a little bit because you're doing the same thing in either situation. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned like being with my family yeah. is what makes me happy. There's a lot of different ways you can be with your family, right? You can be with your family and be on your phone and be distracted and irritated that your kids are interrupting your doom scroll. Or you can really like be there. And that's been one of the biggest realizations for me that I don't think I could have accessed. Or maybe, you know, if I was going to meditate an hour a day for 20 years, I could have got there. Yeah. But for me, it was a raspberry, man. I had an experience. I ate a raspberry during a journey. And all of a sudden it was like, hold up. And there's a quote that I really like, or it might not be a quote, but something I read recently that said, you know, someone who is asking, you know, what is purpose or what's my purpose or what's the meaning of life is really just someone who's distracted. And what I mean by that is like, if you're present enough, mm-hmm. like if you are just present enough and you don't treat everything you do as a means to an end, but a means on its own, there is meaning found there. Whether it's
not a means to an end, you said.
Yeah.
There's not. Yeah.
If you give
that's
everything you
that's
do.
So such a big struggle for me because it's all about the finish line.
Yes.
You know,
dude.
It's all about, and then looking at religion, same thing. And you know, it's, well, what's the point? I just heard, anyways, what's the point of living if there's not a God and there's not religion? And then you're like, wait, what's the point of drinking this Diet Coke if I know it's going to end? Because I can still enjoy it while I'm drinking it. You know, yeah. Like you can, every day we do activities that do end, but we know that they're going to end and that actually brings the enjoyment with it. Rather yeah. than you're not waiting for your favorite song to end to enjoy it. You need to be enjoying it while the song's playing.
Right.
And that's so hard for me to do.
I'm kind of a sucker for like baked food. I wouldn't want a donut if someone told me like, you can have this donut, but you have to keep eating donuts for the rest of forever.
Yeah.
It will never end. Like I don't want that. I think the duality is important. And even then, I just think that like the more we can plug in, because again, we're really like fighting against our environment here. Mm-hmm. Smartphones, everything that we have is like more fast paced. We tried playing, We tried playing like an old Disney movie for our kids a few weeks ago that we would have grown up with. I can't remember which one it was. And our kids were just like, it wasn't fast enough. It wasn't like shiny and you know, it just wasn't exciting enough for them to keep up with, or they were moving too fast for it. But I think the more that we can like train ourselves to just be like, everything we do is a means to an end. We eat dinner so that we can, you know, go do something else. Everything we do, I'm in the shower so that I can, I'm brushing my teeth so that I can, I'm driving so that I can. But if we give everything we do its due and are totally present there, I think the meaning reveals itself without having to get all philosophical and philosophize about it. It just kind of shows up and the meaning is found.
Yeah. Talking about it's not up here anymore. I don't know where it popped up. It was like an 11 second something. This is it's a Sam Harris waking up app.
Yeah.
And it was 11 seconds. I'd never clicked on one of his like meditations that was 11 seconds. And it was like a message. And it said, the point of meditation, this is why I just wanted to play it, but I can't find it anymore. The point of meditation is just realizing that we aren't who we think we are. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, now what? But you know, his meditation is very much teaching on how to separate, like, you are not your thoughts. He kind of went into that a little bit. And it's just experiencing life rather than you, and again, living in the moment. But just at any given time, you don't need to lay down and meditate. You know, you can be meditating as you're hiking, because meditation is just noticing what you notice.
It's just a way of being, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have to just keep doing that every day, multiple times a day, and just little gentle reminders of just like, okay, this is life. This is where I'm at. Yeah. Have you heard of Sam Harris before?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love all
of love the app.
He gets really into, and he has a lot of different guests and a lot of different philosophies and like very practical philosophies. Like this past week, I listened to one, negative visualization. It's like, why would you want to negatively visualize something? And then it was bridging that gap of, how do you learn how to want what you already have? Well, how about imagine not having what you already have? And then when you come back to reality and you realize that you do have a spouse or a house or a car or a job, then you're like, oh, wow, I'm super grateful for that.
Yeah, dude. Cool. Kind of, maybe call this a hack. Got this from Dr. Benjamin Hardy. If you haven't read any of his stuff, I would suggest it. Something my wife and I do to help hold each other accountable. And it's exactly that. When we notice each other being like irritated by the kids or whatever it is, the other one will lovingly say, gone. And it's kind of an opportunity for the other one to think like, oh yeah, like, man, the kids could be gone, or like I could be gone, or this home that we have, it could be gone. Is a great practice.
The last time, that was another one of the little segments. This could be the last time.
It could be, man. And we take a lot of what we have for granted, especially time. But
yeah, that's what I love. His meditation app is the one that I found like tenfold of any other ones that give you quick, practical things. Not, there's the philosophy, but there's like, okay, fast forward in time and think how grateful you would be to live in this moment again. If you were 70 years old, how grateful would you be to be with your kids right now? And you're just like, those are very actually easy things to do, you know?
It's free.
And it's free, and you can do it at any freaking time. Anyways, I'm a big proponent of that. That's my favorite meditation app for sure. And it's just great philosophy.
It's what I use as well. Yeah.
Dude, Sam Harris, man, I'm trying to get him on this podcast.
That would be sick.
I have a PR guy working on it. and he is not, he's on pause, I guess. We got Andrew Huberman. He's coming on.
No way.
Which I'm freaking stoked about.
Huge. That's
and,
very
and
cool.
Dave Asprey should be coming on pretty soon too. Trying to get some, but
bangers,
Sam
man.
Harris, dude, that's coming for you.
He's a go.
He's going to be on here.
Cause
he's
amazing.
And I just want to ask him what the hell's up with free will still. Think about that every single day.
Free will is tough, dude. It's one of those ones that I just haven't even, I'm really, and this is me personally, I'm really interested in like what is productive. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I think that there are parts of the free will discussion that are very productive, and then other parts that are like, well, if I don't have any control over what
it's
I do.
It's this pendulum.
It kind of feels like really good toward nihilism, right?
Yes.
Like nothing matters. It doesn't matter what I do because it's all predetermined and whatnot. I don't.
But on the other side, me, if I'm imagining as somebody cutting me off, to put myself or just to keep the mindset of, well, if I was born into their genetics and their environment, I would have cut me off too.
Yes. Empathy.
It gives you an unlimited amount. If you view the world in this robotic, predetermined, whatever, and it doesn't have to be predetermined, but the fact that if this person was given the same chance with the same genetic makeup, the same hormones in their mind in that moment, they would have always done, including me, would have always done what they would have done. So you could say it's a choice, but if there's only one option, is that a choice? I don't know. Doesn't matter. But there's an infinite amount of empathy and an infinite amount of sympathy and an infinite amount of gratitude because I am where I'm at because I am. And that's it. There's no more pride either. So like there's all these amazing emotions and endless gratitude, but there's also the, okay, hopelessness, you know? So it's,
yeah,
that's why I want to talk with Sam, but I'm a believer in it. I'm a believer in, there is no libertarian free will. And I think it's brought me immense amounts of understanding and empathy and forgiveness, mainly towards myself. It's been a really good tool.
Yeah, dude. I think anything that's useful.
Yeah.
I'm very much of the functional contextualism. Like if it works, it's true. Uh-huh. I'm very much on team. Does it work?
Yeah.
Like, is there evidence that it works? Can it create a difference? Even if it's something as, you know, maybe as arbitrary as if I don't believe in free will, it gives me more empathy for other people and enhances my experience on this rock. Great.
Yeah, I like that. And I'm trying to accept that a little bit more and more on just, we don't know. So if it works, that's the best you got and just go with it.
Yeah, not knowing is scary.
So last question for you, Wes. What do you want your legacy to be? How do you want to be remembered by when you're gone?
Yeah. This is the question. I want to be remembered as a man who created order in a generative, loving way. A man who demonstrated discipline. Someone who was creative and someone who loved.
I like
compassionately.
That. I like the order too. That's one that I haven't heard. It's very unique.
I think,
but there's so much chaos. We do need more order, more reliance, more safety.
Yeah, dude. Honestly, like, I don't think we're going to be remembered. 100 years from now, the people that remember me will be gone.
Yeah.
And so the legacy thing in terms of, I think the legacy conversation can be very productive. How am I going to be remembered is a very selfish question. With that said, we are all leaving a legacy, especially as parents, because we are creating a template. And for most of us, the template we have is the one that we inherited, the one that we received from our parents, who oftentimes were doing the very, very best that they could. Bless their hearts. Like, we love them. But they oftentimes inherited the template from their parents.
Yep.
Most of us have never had a model of like what it looks like. Like, what should a father be? What should a mother be? Like, what does that template look like? All of us leave a legacy, whether we want to or not. And I don't think it's so much about how you're remembered in the minds of the people that were around you with their words. It's
how did you impact them more?
Yeah.
Whether it's consciously or not.
Yes. Like, are my kids and grandkids stuck with the problems that I inherited because I wasn't willing to do the work to change the template? I think your legacy is like behaviorally, energetically what you pass down. not so much the memory, because the memory's gonna fade. Away, anyway. Once I'm gone, yep. people will be sad for a good week, and then they're gonna go back to work.
Yep.
So, okay. I think legacy is about impact, big time.
I like that. Well, where do listeners connect with you?
mostly on Instagram, Think and Grow Dangerous. On Instagram,
oh, I like
where
that.
You can find me. Shoot me a DM.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate you, buddy.